The scripture this morning is Proverbs 10:4 and Matthew 20:1-16. A lazy person will end up poor, but a hard worker will become rich. The kingdom of heaven is like a man who owns some land. One morning he went out very early to hire some people to work in his vineyard. The man agreed to pay the workers one silver coin for working that day. Then he sent them into the vineyard to work. About 9 o'clock, the man went to the marketplace and saw some other people standing there doing nothing. So he said to them, "If you go and work in my vineyard, I will pay you what your work is worth." So they went to work in the vineyard. The man went out again about 12 o'clock and again at 3 o'clock. Both times he hired people to work in his vineyard. About 5 o'clock, the man went to the marketplace again. He saw others standing there. He asked them, "Why do you stand here all day doing nothing?" They answered, "No one gave us a job." The man said to them, "Then you can go and work in my vineyard." At the end of the day, the owner of the vineyard said to the boss of all the workers, "Call the workers and pay them. Start by paying the last people I hired. Then pay all of them, ending with the workers I hired first." The workers who were hired at 5 o'clock came to get their pay. Each worker received one silver coin. Then the workers who were hired first came to get their pay. They thought they would be paid more than the others, but each one of them also received one silver coin. When they got their silver coin, they complained to the man who owned the land. They said, "Those people were hired last and worked only 1 hour, but you paid them the same amount as you paid us, and we worked hard all day in the hot sun." But the man who owned the vineyard said to one of those workers, "Friend, I am being fair to you. You agreed to work for one silver coin, so take your pay and go. I want to give the man who was hired last the same pay that I gave you. I can do what I want with my own money. Are you jealous because I am good to those people?" So those who have the last place now will have the first place in the future, and those who have the first place will not have the last place in the future.
Imagine with me a scenario, perhaps you've lived this one out. You have someone in your family who is having a 5-year-old birthday party. To celebrate the birthday party, you are inviting a group of friends, and you decided that you are going to have cake and ice cream at a park. There's a nice shelter to the side of the park. The children start playing on the jungle gym and the swings and various things. One of them falls, skins her knee. You go over there to console her. Your tensions are running high, but you're able to soothe things. And then it comes time to cut the cake, and you start portioning out the cake. And then you catch, just out of the corner of your eye, one little boy looking at his cake, and then he starts looking at the other pieces of cake. And he says, "It's not fair. My piece isn't as big as his." That's not fair. Have you been in that situation? You think about this. This plays out in so many other instances. Say you are old, you have kids who are older, teenagers, you're trying to decide where are we going to eat. You finally just make a default decision because nobody can make a decision, and you go and you order, and then you start portioning out the chicken nuggets. And what happens? "That's not fair! He got more chicken nuggets than I did." Or as adults, you think about the tough situation surrounding a death and then gathering to hear the reading of a will. And as the will gets read, something is portioned out in a different way than expected. Maybe someone voices it, but typically this is something that you hold your tongue and you say afterward, "That's not fair. I didn't get the house even though I was there to take my relative to the doctor every single time he needed it. That's not fair." How often do we say that? And what are we appealing to when we say it? Is there someone immediately above us who's going to step in and make things right? Are we asking God to do that? That's not fair. Perhaps you know C.S. Lewis's work, Mere Christianity. C.S. Lewis, the noted writer and Christian apologist from the mid-20th century, wrote a book. They started as radio addresses, and they eventually evolved into a book, trying to offer some logical steps for why we should believe in Christianity. One of the beginning arguments is essentially this very statement. That's not fair. He says, in so many instances, when you put people into a series of questions and you ask them, why are we here? What are we doing? Even if they have a tendency to say, well, it's just a matter of chance. We're just here because of a confluence of events that we had no control over. We don't know where we're going or what this is about. C.S. Lewis argues that even those people in certain situations in life, if you are to portion out monies in a company, those individuals would be some of the first ones to step forward and say, that's not fair. I did not get my just reward. And here in the United States, we have this idea of the Protestant work ethic. And it highlights those ideas that we see all the way back in Proverbs. That one verse there, the lazy will become poor and the industrious will become rich. We expect things to work out that way. But what happens in life when things do not work that way? When we've been working for years at a company, and it comes time for a promotion, and the boss passes us by. What happens in these instances in life? We go to this parable in the Gospel of Matthew, and some might think, well, this parable doesn't seem to help us. If we reconstruct the situation around the telling of the parable, it's one of those points when the disciples have come to Jesus and they've said, Jesus, you know we've been traveling with you. You know we've made all these sacrifices. Are you taking note of them? And that is when Jesus voices a verse that we know, and yet sometimes we do not fully understand. When he says, the last will be first and the first will be last. From that point forward, Jesus launches into this parable. It's a familiar structure. We see it time and time again in the ministry of Jesus. A vineyard. A wealthy person who is in control of things and the relationship between that owner and the workers. Various situations play out, but in this one, the rich person is looking for workers in the vineyard. This is about recruitment, pulling them in to become a part of the labor in the vineyard. We know that the worker goes out at the start of the day. So right there at sunrise. And those of us who like to rise early in the morning, or those of us who know about rising early in the morning, make certain assumptions about these workers. We say, well, these are the workers who are industrious. These are the workers who are motivated. They are out there at the very crack of dawn to find work. So these will be the good workers, we assume, in this vineyard. The workers make this very simple, straightforward agreement with the vineyard owner, saying they will get one silver coin for a day's labor. they are satisfied with this agreement. Otherwise, they would not have gone into the fields to work. It is a fair wage. The parable says they see it as a fair wage. The parable, though, does not end there. This is about recruitment. And so we see the owner going back 3 hours later, about 9 o'clock in the morning, and he finds workers who are just standing around. And we get that vision maybe leaning against a building or a post or something. We might make certain assumptions about that posture and say, well, these workers are lazy. They weren't out there at the very beginning of the day. But the vineyard owner is concerned about them and says, well, they need to be working and I have plenty of land for them to work. And so he pulls them in. No real discussion about wage at this point, but the promise that it will be fair, Jesus holding the punchline as he tells this. The owner does not stop at 9 o'clock, but comes back at noon and at 3, and at both those times pulls in new workers. We're not given any sort of details about what's happening out in the fields. But can you imagine how you would be feeling if you had started working in a field at 6 o'clock in the morning or even at 9 o'clock in the morning and then you saw more workers coming in at noon and at 3? How are you going to be feeling about them? And then the real kicker here is just before the workday is about to end, the owner goes back out into town, sees more people, and at this point it says he is compassionate toward these workers because these workers have been overlooked. They haven't had the opportunity to work out in the field during the day. So he invites them at this last hour to come and work in his field. The sun goes down. The workers come out of the fields to receive their pay. And here is where those words, last first, first last, come to bear. The workers line up, and it is those who have come last in the day who get paid first. And you think, well, if this had been a situation where the early workers got their pay first, maybe we wouldn't have had this grumbling. But the last workers walk up and receive their payment, and it happens to be 1 silver coin. And they are ecstatic. They have only worked for an hour or just a little more than that, and they've received 1 silver coin. They start celebrating. And the people, this starts working its way back through the line. And those at the back are wondering, did we hear that correctly? And then those hired at 3 o'clock receive their pay, 1 silver coin. Those at noon, 1 silver coin. Those at 9, 1 silver coin. And then those who were hired at 6, who had agreed to 1 silver coin, walk forward, receive a silver coin, and look at it. And suddenly, what they had thought was a fair wage now doesn't look so fair anymore because they're not looking at the coin that they have received, but at the coins the others received. And so we think about that. We get wrapped up in this parable. It's very easy. Just like the parable of the 2 lost sons. We are there with those workers at 6 a.m. We are thinking those who worked longest should receive a greater reward. Shouldn't there be an hourly wage? But what does the vineyard owner say? Why are you jealous? Okay. That's a source of the grumbling. You're jealous. You got what was promised, but now you're so worried that you did not get more than those other individuals. Why are you so upset that I have been generous with my property? We think again of other parables, and I've already mentioned the parable of the lost sons. That crucial point at the very end of that parable, the eldest son comes to the dad. Well, actually, the dad comes to him because he's outside pouting. And the elder son says, "Dad, I've been with you all this time. Now your son, who squandered all that you had, went out and now has come back and you've killed the fatted calf and had a party for him." What does the father say in that parable? He was lost and is found. We need to celebrate. And we look at both of these and we wonder about this. Jesus introduced this by saying, "The kingdom of God is like." What does this parable teach us about God? Why are we so wrapped up with trying to figure out whether a just standard has been applied here? And why is this such a head-scratcher? And why do we resist this so much? Do we wonder if we really like what this parable is saying to us about God and God's generosity? You think about all the different kinds of episodes in life where things do not measure up to our expectations, where God upends things and the last become first and the first become last. We this week will be looking at the life of the Apostle Paul. And if you look at the New Testament itself is one of these upendings in a certain sense, because if we look at the Gospels, we look at the 12 disciples. And you can run down the list of the 12 disciples: Peter, James, John, Andrew, Nathaniel, James. And after Judas commits suicide, they replaced him with Matthias. Thaddeus, Matthew, Philip, Simon, Thomas. And we think, well, surely the rest of the New Testament would be about the adventures of these 12. And the book of Acts does give us some about Peter and some about James and John. But some of these others sort of drop by the wayside. And we look at who contributed the most letters to the New Testament. This upstart, Paul. Where did he come from? He wasn't one of these original 12. And so here we think when Paul has his conversion, and after Ananias baptizes him, how are those original disciples going to receive him? It could have been one of those moments where they said, "Okay, Saul, Paul, we don't trust you. We're not going to endorse you." And in fact, it depends on which books in the New Testament you read. Paul in Galatians presents a nice little argument between him and Peter. So there may have been some tension there. But overall, you see in the book of Acts, when they have the Council of Jerusalem, and essentially Paul's missionary journeys are on the line there, they give him the stamp of approval, and it opens the door to his missionary journeys among the Gentiles. It would have been so easy for the disciples to feel left out here, to once again think about those conversations with Jesus. Think about all we sacrificed for you. Did you take note? And we think about this today. Have you ever felt that situation that voice in your head, the voice of temptation, as you are giving money to support a missions offering, as you are serving in Vacation Bible School, is that voice of temptation at the back of your head saying, God, are you taking note? Do you know what I'm doing? Will you reward me for what I am giving to you, for what I am sacrificing? Jesus' parable here convicts us and tells us that is the voice of temptation. Where do they get in trouble when they start comparing their wages to the wages of the other vineyard workers? And that is what Jesus is telling us today. Don't worry about whether God is taking note of your sacrifices. God is, and God will give you your fair wage. But don't worry about comparing with your neighbor. Don't worry if your standards of fairness get upended. We should all be celebrating the fact that we have the privilege of working in the vineyard. We need to keep our focus on the invitation that the vineyard owner, that God asked us to participate in the advancement of God's kingdom. And if we look back at our lives and we wonder, well, I didn't have $1 million. I didn't have a grand home. I didn't get to live in a resort for all of my life. I didn't get to be Billy Graham. I didn't get to. No. We focus on the fact that we have a relationship with God. And we are ever grateful of the grace that has included us. And that is what we celebrate. Grace is not fair. And we should be ever glad that it isn't. This morning we come now to our time of invitation and commitment. Hymn number 56, To God Be the Glory. This is an opportunity this church offers to you every Sunday. If you've never made a commitment to be a disciple of Christ, we offer this chance for you to walk forward so that this church can receive you, to pray for you, to encourage you as you start that journey as a disciple of Christ. This is also a time for us to recommit ourselves to the advancement of God's kingdom, to putting God's values first in our lives. As we stand together and sing our invitational hymn, hymn number 56, To God Be the Glory.